Thank you for the introduction. My name is Hannes Kulewitz. I'm from the Vienna University of Technology. They are at the Institute of Software Technology. So today I'm here with my hat as a researcher, but I'm also working for the Austrian State Archives. So there I'm the head of the Digital Archives Division. So we are, of course, working together very, very closely. So as you, of course, also know, is that the topic is still very much in research. So the Austrian State Archives and the Vienna University of Technology are working very, very closely on these challenges, and of course also try to find some solutions, not only the problems. So first of all, what is digital preservation? So I mean, I guess you know what's on the screen here. There are a lot of data carriers. We have floppy disks, we have hard drives, tapes, cassettes, and so on and so forth. So that's the medium where we put on our digital information. But the point is, this is not digital preservation. So from our perspective, this is pretty much solved. So when we today put our ones and zeros, our bits and bytes on physical data carrier, we can be pretty much sure that we get exactly the same information back. So that's not really the problem. So we have pretty good solutions, of course, with some money involved. So we have redundant storage, we have long-term storage. So that's already pretty much solved. I know this is also a controversial discussion. So the real challenge is this. So what you see here is a hex editor. So what I'm displaying here is the presentation I'm currently showing you. So I just opened up the PPT file in an editor, and what you see here is the zeros and ones. So this is what you might get in 20 years when we don't take care of logical preservation. So the first thing I showed you was bitstream preservation, but the real challenge is to preserve the intellectual properties of a digital format. And when we have the safest carrier where we, for example, can carve our zeros and ones into, we will have still a problem when we don't take care of the intellectual properties. So what is digital preservation? Digital preservation is information management with a long-term view. So information management is around for many, many years now. So we are collecting information, we are managing this information, and we are distributing it to various audiences. It is interoperability over time. So it's not only interoperability across different domains, it's also interoperability across time. So what we want to do is we want to transport information into the future and make it available to future audiences. So in 20 years, in 30 years, we want that people can read, can interpret, can access, and know what's, for example, on a picture. So that's where metadata comes into play. And it's an alignment between content, technology, and consumers. I left out the budget here, so of course it's also important. So what's the challenge? Digital objects require a specific environment. So a file, a digital file, needs a specific program. A program needs a specific operating system, and an operating system requires a specific hardware environment. So if one of these is lost, so when there is a break in this chain, then the information is probably lost forever. So since hardware, hardware environment is not stable, so what can happen is that files cannot be opened anymore, that embedded objects are no longer accessed or linked. So what you can do, for example, in Microsoft Word, you can put just all just everything in there. So you can put a movie in there, you can put a JPEG in there, a TIFF in there. So it's not only about the wrapper format, it's also about what's in there. Then of course also programs, programs won't run anymore. And in the digital world, information is not decaying. So either it's lost or it's not lost. So there is very few in between. So either it's gone or it's not gone. So once we lose a digital file, it's very, very hard to make sense of it anymore. So digital preservation aims at maintaining digital objects authentically and accessible for long term. So keep the information authentic is one of the hardest parts. So everyone here working in an archive knows that. So for example, when you have a Microsoft Word format and you know you have to do something with it because in 10 years, in 5 years, you won't be able to read it anymore or interpret it anymore. So what's the authentic authentic transformation of it? So you're not allowed to lose any of the properties. So digital preservation is essential for many different types of objects. So office documents, scientific data sets, sensor data, metadata, applications, simulations, and so on. So this is about objects, but it's also about workflows, programs, services, software. So there is, meanwhile, a FP7 project dedicated to these problems, how we can preserve software service with its dependencies. So we live in a world where we have a lot of services that are interconnected with applications. So when you lose one of these services, you lose a lot. And what we want to do there is preserve the execution context. So it's also relevant for all application domains. So in cultural heritage, of course, that's where it started, e-government, public administration. So in Austria, we had a huge project now where we built a digital archive for our e-government data. So in Austria, for the last 10 years, everything, all the information in the ministries is born digital. So the original is digital. So there is no paper pendant anymore. Science, research, of course, industry, health, pharmaceutical industry. So there are, they have huge legal obligations to save information for 30, 40 years, and so on and so forth. And also private data. So everyone definitely wants to save their digital images for the next generation. So you can apply it just everywhere. So there are three level of threat. So the first one I've been talking about was bit rot. So that's physical preservation, bitstream preservation. So we want to make sure that the digital information we put on a data carrier, that we can get it back just as we put it on. So the zeros and ones in the right order that we put it on. Object formats, so that's logical preservation. And that's the hard part. So we want to preserve the intellectual properties of a digital object. I will be talking about that a little bit later. Authenticity, interpretability, and that's semantic preservation. So when we have a digital image, we not only want the zeros and ones to be preserved, we not only want the intellectual properties preserved, but we also want to know what's on this image. So who are the persons on the image, what are the buildings, and so on and so forth. So the three levels are bitstream preservation, logical preservation, semantic preservation. There are a lot of different strategies. I guess many of you are aware of the UNESCO Charter document and the companion document. So there are strategies in there. We have different ones, investment strategies. So for example, we can go for standardization. We heard yesterday there are so many standards out there that we just have to pick one. That's one approach. Encapsulation, for also format limitations. So that's also something we try to limit the number of formats. But of course, that's only possible. It's only very, very hard to achieve that, because in the digital world, new formats are arising every day. And in an archive, for example, we have to deal with everything. And it's very hard to limit these, the formats. Short-term approaches. So for example, you can build a museum with computers, with the different machines that are attached to it. Also an approach, but this only works for a short time, because once you run out of the components, then you're lost. Backwards compatibility, also an approach, but we see, for example, when you use the Microsoft Office suite, that even Microsoft Word has problems with backwards compatibility. So when you open up a Word document with a very new version of Word, then you get this tiny box with a hint that says, you lost some information, but I don't know which one exactly, but something has been lost. So, and the only button you can click is OK. So it's also very hard to achieve that. Version migration, so within a specific version, so migrate from an old version of Microsoft Word to a newer version. Re-engineering, of course, that's also done, but it's also very, very hard to achieve, because very often it's also a legal issue that you're not allowed to do it. Medium long-term approaches, so there is migration, emulation, and build viewers. So I want to explain those a little bit in more detail. So migration is one of the most popular approaches. So migrate from one version to a different version, so from Word to PDF, or within a version or within a file format family, from an older version of Word to a newer one. So many different institutions use it. So there are a myriad of different converges out there, and you have the possibility to compare the previous version and the newer version, so you can also do some sort of quality assurance, which is very, very good. So you very often know which properties you lost or which one have been preserved 100%. But there are also problems, of course. So when you do in the chain of different migration steps, when you do a mistake somewhere in between, this mistake grows, of course. So when you're doing a mistake in the first migration step, then migrate from the first to the second, from the second to the third, this mistake propagates. So and at the end you have something completely different than at the version before, which is a real problem when you're throwing away the versions before. So it of course cannot be used for all objects. So there are just object types where we don't have conversion tools, and of course it requires continuous actions. So you have to do it continuously. Then the next approach is emulation, which is also very, very popular. So you build an emulator for a specific environment. So you do not change the object itself. So what you do here is you change its environment, which is good, but also not that good, because it's very, very hard to build an emulator. It's also legal issues involved. Very often you're just not allowed to do it. And so you see these problems in interactive computer games where the different companies protect their systems. Then one positive thing is that objects, that the object is rendered identically. So it's not a mistake on the slide. It's also a disadvantage. So on the one hand, it's very nice to see how it looked like 20 years or 30 years ago, but it can also be a huge disadvantage. So when you take, for example, a very old text editor VI, for instance, I don't know how many people are able to work with this editor anymore, so to know all the shortcuts and so on and so forth. So, and when we preserve, for example, a Microsoft Word document or a WordPerfect document, then in 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, we don't know if the people will still be able to use these programs. So if there will be a mouse, for example, if there will be icons, so if you will be, if it will be possible to work with the program. And of course, it's a very complex technology, and you have the same challenges there. So you have to build emulators of emulators. So you have to emulate the infrastructure of a previous emulator, and when you do a mistake in there, you have the same problems that you have with migration. And of course, there are also alternative approaches, like non-digital approaches, just to print it out, can also be an option, but it's also very expensive, and you also lose a lot of information. So when you print out a spreadsheet, you lose probably all the formulas behind the cells, and so on and so forth. And also data archaeology. So you just put the information somewhere in a data carrier, and wait until you need it, and then you try to, you know, make sense of it. So it's also possible. The point here is that there is no single optimal solution. So there is no one optimal approach. So it depends on the scenario you have. It depends on your digital information. It depends on your requirements and what you want to achieve, your designated community, and so on and so forth. So, and that's the hard part, to pick the optimal solution. So I will talk about how we can do that in a minute. So digital preservation, it's a pretty complex task. So everyone who works in the field realizes that. So it requires a conscious, concise understanding of the object. So the curator needs to have a knowledge of very different fields. So you need to have kind of a computer science background. You need to have knowledge about what is important in the institution you're working with. If you work in a library, there are different properties that are important to you than when you work in an archive or when you work in a bank or insurance company. So you have to have knowledge in a very broad spectrum of in a very broad field. And it requires a continuous commitment to preserve objects to avoid the digital dark age. So it's not a task we do today and then we are done. So it requires measurements continuously. So every year, every half year. So as long as it's running in operation, everything is more or less fine. So, and digital preservation is defined in a preservation plan. So I will talk about preservation planning in a minute. So the function you see in the OIS model. So what are possible solutions? So we heard, I was talking about the challenges, the problems we have in the field. So there are also pretty nice standards and initiatives. So on the one hand, records management, the records management standard, I'm sure you're familiar with that. The OIS model, we heard about it yesterday. There are also audit and certification initiatives. So we have the TRAC criteria list, so the trustworthy repositories, audit and certification, the criteria and checklist, Nestor, very similar to TRAC, Jambora for risk assessment. So there are a lot of initiatives already. So just very briefly, OAS model. So the main achievement of the OAS model is that since it came up, we have a common terminology. So everyone is talking about the same, about ingest, about access, preservation planning, SIPs, DIPs, and all that. So the submission information package, what we are actually preserving, and so on and so forth. So this is the main achievement of the OIS model. But the OIS model is not a specific implementation. So you cannot take the OIS model and start implementing it. So, and there is also nothing like the system is OIS compliant. So also a text editor is OIS compliant. So you have ingest there, you have data storage there, you have access there. So what we need is more detailed audit and certification criteria there. So we have seen that yesterday. So since then, everyone is talking about these functions. And what's also in the OIS model is how everything, all that interrelates. So this is one of the big achievements of the OIS model. Also, compliance. So this is also very important when you're in charge of a repository. So what you want to make sure is that the repository is trustworthy. And what we have there is the track criteria catalog, which you can take and make an objective assessment of the functions you have in the in your institution. So it's not enough to say, okay, that's OIS compliant, because this means almost nothing. So what you do is you take the track catalog and answer the questions in there. So this enables you to make an objective assessment of the different functions. Now, preservation planning. So what you have seen in the OIS model, on top you have a function called preservation planning. And preservation planning enables you, or should enable you, to find the optimal solution for the digital preservation challenges you have in your institution. So there are different solutions out there. We have seen them. So there is migration, there is emulation, there are thousands of tools out there. And the challenge here is to pick the optimal one, because each of the strategies, each of the alternatives has its strength and weaknesses. So when you have a certain conversion tool and try it out on your digital objects, you see how it works or how it not works. It has benefits, but it also has disadvantages. So what you need to do is to evaluate these tools, and preservation planning, that's a task of preservation planning. So you want to know which is the optimal solution for your setting. So what we want to be able is to prove in 20 years, 50 years, 100 years that the decision we take today, so for example, to migrate from TIFF to JPEG 2000, from Microsoft Word to PDF, was at that time the optimal solution. And this enables preservation planning. So it is a consistent workflow that analyzes which solution you should adopt. So it's nothing that one person does. So it runs through, so the person runs through the workflow and evaluates the options. So what you have to do is to bring together all the stakeholders in your institution, because there are very different people that are involved with your collection. So you have the computer science people, so the person or the people who are in charge of the technical infrastructure in your institution, the curators who have an interest in the intellectual properties of the objects. Then, of course, the people who are in charge of the budget, they tell you how much money you have, and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of things that that the optimal solution depends on. And it's repeatable and solid evidence. So the most important thing of a preservation plan is that you're able to repeat it in 5 years, 10 years, or 50 years. So when you have to prove that your solution really was the best one 10 years ago, then you have to be able to run the preservation plan again. So again, the OAS model, we have preservation planning in there, and what the OAS model tells you is that. So you have to have to develop preservation strategies and standards. This is informed by monitor technology, develop packaging designs and migration plans, monitor the designated community. So there are a lot, some functions in there that are defined, but the OAS model does not tell you how to do it. And that's what I mentioned before. It's not a specification that you can follow and implement. So what we did, we developed a workflow for it. So what we did, we took the utility analysis that has been years since the 60s and adopted it for preservation planets for preservation planning. So what you do here is you start with documenting the planning context. You document your requirements, so your unique requirements, document the possible solutions, the strategies you have. So you take into consideration all your possible solutions and evaluate them. And at the end, what you receive is a conscious preservation plan that you can put into operation. All that is implemented in a tool called Plato, the preservation planning tool. So it's what Plato is a reference implementation for the workflow. So everyone can develop it his or her own tool, but what you can do there is create such a preservation plan. It's at the end you receive an XML file and a PDF with all the information you put in, with all the evaluation that Plato gives you, and receive the optimal solution for your digital preservation challenges. So at the end, you will receive a strategy that says, for example, migrate your Microsoft Word documents in the version 97 to 2003 with the tool, for example, Image Magic, to PDF, for example. And you can be sure that is because of the evaluation, it's the optimal solution for your context. So with preservation planning, I want to close my talk. And thank you for your attention. And if you have any questions, just throw them at me. Thank you.